Hello, and welcome to Such a Fun Read, a podcast where we come together to read a book and chat about it, like a book club. I am your host and resident reader, Cherie, and I am really excited for these next few episodes. We are going to be diving in and discussing one of my favorite books, A Discovery of Witches by Deborah Harkness. And we will be discussing it chapter by chapter. We'll be getting into the characters, the story, the lore, and unraveling how this series all begins. Now, this podcast is not spoiler-free, but we will not be discussing anything that happens in the future books in the series. We will only be discussing what we've read so far. And in this episode, we are going to be discussing chapters 1-6. So whether you are a diehard fan of the series or discovering it for the very first time, there is definitely something here for all of us to enjoy together. It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with a discovery of witches. Now, before we get into these chapters, I do want to discuss my history with this book, how it became a favorite, why we are reading it together, and what to expect from these episodes. I do remember there being an article about this book in the series back in the day. I think it was called something along the lines of Harry Potter for adults, you know, back when everything needed to be tied to Harry Potter in order to sell. I think this was when the Book of Life was coming out. Anyway, that article must have worked for me because at some point I ended up buying the book. And I finally read it in 2016, and to be honest, I did not like it. But I ended up keeping the book. And I always looked over at it on my bookshelf. It was like it was asking me to read it again, to give it another chance. Then a couple years later, in 2018, I did decide to give it another chance, and I read it again. I think being a mood reader definitely had a lot to do with this, because when I read it the second time, I felt like I was reading a totally different book. It was like I was reading things I didn't read before. There were scenes I didn't remember from the first time around, and I was definitely enjoying the hell out of those scenes. I finished a book, and I really had no clue as to why I didn't like it the first time around, and I ended up reading the other two books in the trilogy that same year. I also pre-ordered Times Convert and read that when that came out. I made sure to own the hardcovers and the paperbacks of each book. And I also bought the TV show tie-in covers as well, because apparently I just needed to have them too. The World of All Souls, The Complete Guide of A Discovery Witches, Shadow of Nights, and The Book of Life is a book I also own, and I have pulled it off my shelf and looked through it many times throughout the years. So what I'll say about this is sometimes giving a book another shot just might work out. At least it did for me in this case. It doesn't always work out, but I'm very happy that it did with this series. I found a couple that I love, characters I would befriend in a heartbeat, also characters I want to stab, and characters I will just never get over. I also, of course, watched the TV show when that came out and loved it. And I have continued to tell myself over and over again throughout the years that I was going to reread this book, reread this series, and get back into this world, and it just never happens. I always end up thinking that I just need to read something new. But last year, I reread the first three books in the Red Rising Saga, another one of my favorite series. So I ended up rereading them because I was in a book slump, and I have to say, I really, really had fun doing it. So I figured, why not go ahead this year and do a reread of my other favorite series? And why not go ahead and do it on the podcast? Maybe I'll be able to find some other people who will want to reread it with me. So that is why we are here, to reread this book together. Or if you are reading it for the very first time, welcome to the World of All Souls. Now, what to expect from these episodes? So in each episode, I will be covering a certain amount of chapters in the book. Again, you do not have to have the book completed to listen to the episodes, but I would recommend reading the chapters being covered for the episode you are listening to, because those chapters will be spoiled. First, we will talk about what just happened. what we just read. We will go chapter by chapter, and this part will be known as the manuscript section. Then we will talk about the things that stood out in each chapter, things that we might think will be important later on. And we'll also talk a little bit about lore here as well. And this section will be known as the congregation. And then we will have a 3-2-1 section. Here we'll go over three characters I want to talk about, two things I'm looking forward to, what moments have intrigued me about what could happen in the future, and one favorite quote. I will pick a favorite quote from these chapters. Also, I would love to hear from you all as well, to share your thoughts on the chapters, theories about characters, about the plot, or predictions from what just might happen next. And there are multiple ways you can reach me. You can send me an email to suchafunread@gmail.com. And you can also give a follow on Instagram and TikTok at suchafunread. Also, something that would truly help this podcast grow, if you are enjoying these discussions about a discovery of witches, please head on over to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app and rate and review Such a Fun Read. It helps spread the word and allows for more fans of the book that we're reading to join our discussions and our community. And with that all being said, let's go ahead and get into the manuscript section and talk about what happened in these chapters. And I also pose a question for you. How long do you think Diana can suppress her magic? Now, chapter one, it looks like we have a reluctant witch. We start in Oxford's Bodleian Library and we meet our main character, Diana Bishop. She is a tenured historian professor who is pursuing her doctorate. Diana is getting manuscripts that she has requested from the call desk, one of them being Ashmole 782. And there is something different about this manuscript. There is something magical about it. And Diana is not having any of it. She wants nothing to do with magic, nothing to do with being a witch. She looks over the manuscript and then returns it as quickly as possible. We also get some backstory about Diana's upbringing. Her parents were powerful witches. Her mother was Rebecca Bishop and father Stephen Proctor. They died when she was 7. They went to Africa and they didn't come back alive. Diana was raised by her aunt Sarah Bishop, also her aunt's partner M, but she's not mentioned yet. We'll get to her in a chapter or so. Now, Diana is very smart. She attended college at the age of 16 and graduated when she was 20. But while she was in college, her magic was rather apparent. She was in theater, and any performance she had, her magic seeped into it. That is when she left the theater, and after a summer abroad program in England, she became a history major. We also see Diana be reluctant to participate in any activities surrounding being a witch when she turns down Gillian Chamberlain to spend time with other witches in town. Chapter 2. It seems like a curious vampire enters. We are on to a new day, the 21st day of September. It is the eve of the autumn equinox. Diana has been in the library all day since 9 a.m. We learn that Diana didn't do anything with her studies in alchemy after dealing with Ashmole 782. She did other things more normal in her opinion, like paying bills and chores and trying new recipes, mostly just getting away from her magic and trying to pretend like what happened the day before didn't happen. Diana again declined hanging out with Gillian and the other witches, but she uses her magic, reluctantly, of course. She's trying to get a book off the shelf and there are no step stools around. This is only her 5th time using her magic this year, so she figures it should be fine, right? But here's the thing. She was seen by a vampire, none other than Matthew Claremont himself. Then Diana almost falls at the bottom of the stairs, but Matthew is there to catch her. He introduces himself and says that he is a fan of her work. He also invites her out to dinner. She declines his dinner invitation, of course, and also his scent reminded her of Ashmole 782. And that really unnerved her. So she ends up leaving the library earlier than she usually would and heads back to her rooms. I believe she falls asleep on the couch. And then after waking up in the middle of the night, she ends up calling Sarah and M back home. Diana tells them about Matthew, and Sarah isn't happy. She doesn't believe that witches, vampires, and demons, we'll get to those, should mix. And M gets a bit weird toward the end of the call. Diana thinks there's something about Matthew Claremont that M isn't telling her yet. Chapter 3, A Midnight Visitor. So this chapter is from Matthew's point of view. It is the same night as chapter 2, and he's watching Diana. He then sneaks into her rooms while she's sleeping through her kitchen window, which she had open when she got home. He's looking for Ashmole 782. He thinks something isn't right with Diana. She doesn't give off the same scent as the other witches. He thinks she is hiding something. You are in her room, sir. Are you going to tell her that you are in her rooms? Or are you going to hide that? So does it matter if she is hiding something? Anyway, then he ends up seeing light coming from Diana's body, which distracts him for a moment before looking through Diana's desk for the manuscript. He did find himself watching her for several hours while she slept. He also wondered if he should just go ahead and taste the witch's blood to find out where the manuscript was. Instead, he decided the manuscript must still be in the library and left the way he came in. Chapter 4, Creatures of the Library. Now, I should probably point out that there are no chapter titles in these books. I'm just adding a little title to each chapter myself. Just didn't want to confuse anyone. Chapter 4, Creatures of the Library. We are back to Diane's perspective and on to the next day. She's back in the library. She doesn't get her usual seat, though. That is A4. Matthew Claremont is sitting across from it, and she ends up taking a different one. Diana does make a lot of noise going to the seat that she decided on, which was still near Matthew, just not across from it. She definitely wanted to disturb him. Diana wonders why he isn't in the northern part of the library, and Matthew wonders if she believes everything she reads about vampires. She wonders why he seems to be around all of a sudden, thinking it not to be a coincidence. He, of course, says that it is. We know it isn't, but, you know. I mean, you don't sneak into someone's rooms if it's just going to be a coincidence. At some point during the morning, Diana does notice there are more creatures in the library than usual. There was a moment where Diana noticed another witch in the library and felt threatened by him. When he moved toward her, she heard a voice in her head and wondered if it was him. She wanted him to get the hell out of her head and said so. Claremont came over quickly and began to shield her. He also asked her if she was all right. The witch ended up leaving, saying that he mistook the seats across from Diana to be available. Diana said that she was fine, and she wanted Matthew to move away from her because others were noticing. That day, Diana left the library around 3, which is also earlier than she usually does. She couldn't concentrate anymore. And also, all of the creatures watched as she left. After going home and changing, she decided to go for a run over to the boathouse. We learned that a doctor had mentioned when she was younger that her body seemed to think it was in a constant state of danger. Physical activity helps keep her panic at bay. She decided to go rowing to calm herself down. And afterwards, she has another encounter with Matthew Claremont. She confronts him, wondering what he is doing, why him and his friends were out there. He says that those other creatures are not his friends. They are not interested in him. They are interested in her. Those creatures have been following her because they believe that she found something that had been lost years ago. Ashmole 782. Diana says that she doesn't have the manuscript and that she returned it on Friday. Matthew warns her about how serious the creatures are and how she should be on guard once they learn how different she is. Chapter 5, A Search for Answers. Diana decides to take some time to look up information on Matthew on the internet. But there wasn't much information about him. She wants to try to figure out who he is and also try to figure out what his interests might be in Ashmole 782. She does end up finding a lot of his scholarly literature. There seems to be too much. She wonders, how old is he? She ends up calling her friend Christopher Roberts. He is a fellow faculty member at Yale and a molecular biologist. She calls him to see if he has any info on Matthew Claremont, since they are both scientists. Chris has heard of Matthew Claremont, and he mentions how big of a deal he is. Also, just a note, Chris does not know that Diana is a witch. And at the end of their discussion, Chris does say that if Matthew breaks her heart, he will kick his ass. And finally, chapter 6, A New Day at the Bobland. So it's the next morning and Diana has gone for a run. When she returns, the porter tells her that he's sorry he turned her friend away the night before. An Australian woman had tried to visit Diana, but she wasn't answering her phone. Diana had turned the ringer off because her Aunt Sarah wasn't really good with the time change. She returns back to the library. Matthew Claremont is there again, and this is when Diana kind of starts to refer to him as just Claremont. This is also when we meet Miriam, Dr. Miriam Shepherd. She is there with Claremont. Matthew does note that he won't be sitting near Diana on that day, and Diana gets to sit in her normal seat. There aren't as many creatures around the library on that day either, at least not as many as there were the day before. Then it's lunchtime, and Diana goes off to lunch. Also, Claremont gets a reluctant Miriam to follow Diana. Here, while Diana is out at lunch, she meets Agatha Wilson. She is a demon. And Agatha just starts talking to Diana about Ashmole 782. She talks about how they weren't sure that they would see the book again, and especially after what the witches did with it. She also then hands Diana a newspaper, the headline reading, Vampire on the Loose in London. Two bodies were found in an alley. No blood evidence was found at the scene. Vampire murders is what the local residents are calling it. Peter Knox's name is mentioned. We learn that he is an author on best-selling books on modern occultism, and he's been consulted by agencies around the world on cases of satanic and serial killings. I'd say put a pin in that name. Now, he is someone that we have not met yet, at least by name. Agatha wonders about Ashmole 782, and Diana says that she returned a book once she was done with it. Agatha wonders if the witches told Diana to send the book back. Agatha says that the witches don't get to decide what happens to the book. It belongs to all of them. Agatha also gives Diana information about the book. Agatha tells Diana that the book tells them why they are here, the beginning, middle, and the end. She also wants to make sure that Diana knows that demons are part of the story too. She also says a few times that Matthew is Diana's vampire, and Diana doesn't like that so much. Then after their conversation, Diana starts to wonder why Agatha nor Matthew have called for the manuscript at the library. So when Diana returns to the library, she decides that she is going to be friendly towards Matthew from here on out. She ends up thanking him for his protection the last few days. She feels like she can get information from him. If he needs her in regards to Ashmole 782, then she wants for him to tell her why it is so important. Now let's go to the congregation and talk about some of these key events that happened in these chapters. First, we'll start with Ashmole 782. So very early on, we get Diana encountering Ashmole 782. This is a manuscript that changes everything for Diana. She has been having this normal life that she has wanted, not having to deal with her magical abilities or dealing with other creatures. We see this when Diana declines Jillian Chamberlain's offers over and over again. And when her aunts, Sarah and Emily, tried to get her to participate in the events surrounding the equinox. But the moment when Diana touches this manuscript, her life is not the same. This manuscript brings Matthew Claremont into her life. He's a vampire and he becomes interested in her, which makes her interested in him and why he is so curious about this manuscript. This also brings a lot of other creatures to the library. We see more witches and more vampires and more demons that wouldn't normally be in the Bodleian Library. But they start to show up and they seem to be waiting for her. We end up meeting a demon, Agatha Wilson, and she gives us more details on what Ashmole 782 might be. She says, "The book explains why we're here. It tells our story, beginning, middle, even the end." So what is going on with this manuscript? And why do all of these creatures want it? And what exactly do these creatures want from Diana? Another key event is when Matthew starts to protect Diana. So there is a weird moment for Diana while she's in the library. One of the days after she encounters Ashmole 782, she is in the library and a witch is looking at her. As he approached her, she couldn't shake the feeling of his presence invading her mind. She conveyed for him to get out of her head. But one thing about that moment surprised Diana. Here's a quote from the book. "Claremont moved so quickly, I didn't see him around the desk. In an instant, he was standing with one hand on the back of my chair and the other on the surface in front of me. His broad shoulders were curved around me like the wings of a falcon shielding his prey." Why would a vampire care about protecting a witch, especially from another witch? There are other moments outside of this when he is looking out for her as well. When she is rowing, when he's back in the library with Miriam, when he sends Miriam to lunch, when Diana decides to go out to lunch. But with him sneaking into her rooms in the middle of the night, yeah, we didn't forget about that. Is he protecting her because he wants to keep her safe? Or is it because he wants to make sure nothing happens to her before he gets what he wants? The next key event to talk about is Diana and magic. So a question I brought up earlier is, how long do you think Diana can suppress her magic? And apparently, the answer is not that long. She apparently uses her magic every once in a while. She does keep a count of how often she uses it throughout the year. There is a moment in this book when Diana uses her magic to get a book from a shelf. And that is the fifth time she's used magic all year, including her encounter with Ashmole 782. But I thought this was interesting. For someone who is so opposed to being a witch and using her magic, she seems to still use it when it is convenient for her. Well, outside of Ashmole 782. The other time she uses it, it's convenient for her. When Ashmole 782 came around, I don't think that was convenience. I think it just happened and it was something that she just couldn't control. Another thing to talk about is what we learned about the creatures in this story. So this story takes us through a world where witches, vampires, and demons coexist. Well, maybe not coexist. Maybe that's too much of a strong word. I guess it's more like they tolerate each other with suspicion. We see prejudice against demons and vampires. We see that quite a bit with Sarah Bishop. She says this when speaking to Diana. "Witches, vampires, and demons aren't supposed to mix. You know that. Humans are more likely to notice us when we do. No demon or vampire is worth the risk." What Sarah says seems to might have some truth to it, at least the human part. The time when Matthew comes over to protect Diana, when the witch is near in the library, a human seems to look a bit too close. But That could also just be something that is said so that the creatures stay away from each other. The human just could have been nosy and interested in what was going on. And we only see a perception of who these creatures are from Diana's perspective. What she knows about demons, Sarah told her. Sarah said, demons constituted a criminal underclass. Their superabundance of cleverness and creativity led them to lie, steal, cheat, and even kill because they felt they could get away with it. And she also said, conversations with demons were impossible because they began in the middle. But we do get another side when Agatha, a fellow demon, speaks about demons. She has a very different perspective than Sarah. Agatha says that demons were hated by humans because they were different. Humans abandoned their children if they turned out to be demons. And demons were accused of possessing souls and making humans insane. And Agatha thinks that they are victims of human fear and envy, even more than witches. Sarah also doesn't have a lot of nice things to say about vampires. She pretty much just tells Diana to stay away from them. Sarah pretty much doesn't really like other creatures. That is what I'm gathering about her from these few chapters. With these vampires, we do learn in this story that they do not burn at the touch of sunlight and they do not have fangs. Now, really quickly, I just wanted to mention this. I always find it funny when I hear people get pissed at certain stories that don't adhere to the whole vampires burn in the sunlight thing. It's like these people act like vampires aren't fictional characters where their origin can be manipulated. A lot of people point to Dracula and how the rules of Dracula should be followed. But in Dracula, sun weakens a vampire, but it doesn't burn them. Dracula can still walk in sunlight. Nosferatu, the unauthorized German adaptation of Dracula, that was apparently the first piece of media that depicted a vampire of burning in sunlight. So with that, I say, let's just let the vampires in the story be the vampires in the story. Another thing to bring up is Diana knows how it feels when she's around these other creatures. So when a witch studies another, the touch of their eyes tingle. When a demon takes a look at you, there is a slight unnerving pressure of a kiss. And when a vampire stares, it feels cold, focused, and dangerous. Now let's get to our 3-2-1 section. For the three characters I want to talk about, I actually want to talk about the Bishop women. Since we are starting off with the Equinox and Mabon, why not talk about some of the witches? And we'll only talk about what we know of them so far. So we'll start with Diana Bishop. She is our main character. She is a tenured history professor at Yale University. She is currently working on getting her doctorate at Oxford. She is reluctant to use magic unless apparently she just wants to. That whole thing that happened with her magic and theater while she was in college spooked her. We see her being reluctant to spend time with other witches. We see this the numerous times that she has declined spending time with Gillian Chamberlain. And another thing, she is the last direct descendant of Bridget Bishop, and that is the bishop from the Salem witch trials. So her renouncing her family's heritage is kind of a big deal. Let's talk a little bit about Sarah Bishop. She is Diana Bishop's aunt, sister to Rebecca. She is also a witch and a member of the Madison Coven. Her partner is Emily Mather, and we see that she definitely does not hold her tongue with Diana, especially about her reluctancy to use her magic. But we also see that she seems to have a prejudice against the other creatures with the way that she speaks about the demons and the vampires. Then we have Rebecca Bishop. We don't know a lot about her. We know she's Diana's mother. We know that she was a professor at Harvard University, and she seemed to be a very powerful witch. There was a scene where she set drapes on fire and Diana was in the room, and that kind of spooked Rebecca. And then she died when Diana was 7. She was in Africa with her husband and did not return alive. And with what we've learned about these women so far, it's clear that their family history and magical lineage definitely carry a significant weight in shaping Diana's identity and her decisions. Diana seems to grapple with the legacy of her ancestors, and she definitely has not dealt with what happened to her parents. Their mysterious death in Africa definitely left behind a lot of unanswered questions. And she's done her best to get away from magic, even though she does use it when she wants. Let's not forget that. But her wanting to separate herself from magic and her experience with Ashmole 782 and all the creatures showing up after that said experience, this is not something that she is going to be able to escape. There is definitely more to learn about the Bishop line, and we should know that with the way the author used a Bishop witch from Salem as part of this bloodline. There will definitely be more twists and revelations to come, and I really can't wait to talk about them. Let's move on to two things I'm looking forward to. What moments have intrigued me about what could happen in the future? So first, let's talk about the newspaper article about the killings. So remember when Agatha gave Diana the article? The headline was Vampire on the Loose in London. It's interesting that Agatha would give Diana this article, maybe because she's been watching Diana. A lot of the other creatures have as well. And Diana has been speaking to Matthew. She hasn't seeked him out, of course, but if Agatha has seen her talking to a vampire, she might think that Diana will give Ashmole 782 to him. And giving Diana this article, that could help put doubt in Diana's mind about trusting a vampire. Even though the humans don't really know about real vampires or that a vampire is actually doing these killings, they just gave the article that name. But Agatha might think this will help her cause. Also, Peter Knox is mentioned in this article, and that's not someone who has been named in these chapters before, so he might show up. The next thing I'm looking forward to is learning more about Matthew Claremont. Of course, yes, the vampire. When Diana was trying to find information about him, she didn't get much, and I can't wait to learn more about him and how old he is, where he's from, more about his family, and seeing more of the other vampires around him, like Miriam. Miriam is definitely one of my favorite characters, so I can't wait to get more from her. And also learn more about what he wants from Ashmole 782, as well as what he wants from Diana. Now we'll move on to favorite quotes. I'll be picking a favorite quote from these chapters. And the quote I'm picking is one said by Matthew Claremont. So this is from chapter 4, when Matthew is back in the Bodleian and Diana is annoyed with his presence. She is wondering why he is in the southern end of the library and not the northern end. She thought he might be more comfortable. And he says, "You don't believe everything you read, do you?" I love that quote. That is definitely one of my favorite quotes in this book. It's telling us that these vampires are not like the other vampires you might have read about or seen on screen. And I think this also might make Diana even more curious. She is an historian, after all. It could make her even more curious about vampires, which means she would be more curious about Matthew. And there is definitely a mystery that needs to be solved with Matthew Claremont. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of our first episode into the world of All Souls. we tackled chapters 1 through 6 of A Discovery of Witches, and I have to say, things are already getting interesting between Diana and Matthew. I'd definitely love to know what your first impressions were of the story or of the characters, as well as who or what you're most intrigued by so far. You can leave me a comment down below if you are watching this on YouTube, or send an email to suchafunread@gmail.com. I'd also love to spotlight your thoughts in future episodes. And if you're enjoying this deep dive into the world of All Souls, please share with your friends. If you know someone that loves this series or could love this series, go ahead and share this episode with them and we can love this series together. Also, please consider rating and reviewing Such a Fun Read on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. As I mentioned earlier, every rating helps spread the word of the show and allows more fans of this book to join in on the discussion and our community. Next time, we'll be discussing chapters 7 through 11, so get ready for more magical discoveries and character revelations. Until then, happy reading!